Hey everyone, this is Andy.
And this is Sam.
And we're the Spiteries. We started the Spiteries review series as a small Patreon side project, but it turns out that my wife is even better at podcasting than I am, so we're bringing the Spiteries review to the masses.
Starting this month, the Spiteries review will be available wherever you get your podcasts, so come and listen as Andy and I chat about the stuff we've watched and the things that we've done.
With brand new episodes every month, the Spiteries review is a peek into what life is like in the Spiteri household, and you never know when Link or Zora will make a surprise appearance.
We've even got older shows in the vault that will be rolled out over the next few months, including reviews on Mean Girls, Twilight, Spirited Away, Cowboy Bebop, and more. So make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Like they say, happy wife equals happy life.
Ugh, you're so lame.
So help us out by joining our Discord and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. The Spiteries review is available now from SPNet. Everyone, and welcome to the Zelda cast here on ZeldaDungeon.net. My name is Andy Spiteri, joined by Allison Aletha. Happy St. Paddy's Day, Al. What's going on?
I just realized that I should, before I leave the house, maybe wear something green. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Hey, I've got a green hat on right here as I hit myself in the head.
Do people still do that? I remember being a kid and people pinch you if you don't wear green.
Yeah, you know. So I have to say, like, I'm not super into St. Patrick's Day. We don't have a lot of Irish blood on in my side of the family. So I've never really been, like, that into it. Like, if someone wasn't wearing green today, I wouldn't pinch him. I don't know. I've never been pinched personally.
I mean, I wouldn't either. But I'm just saying, do people still do that?
If it was, like, if I saw, like, you, or if I saw Gooey or something, and, like, you weren't wearing green, I might pinch you, actually. But just okay. More so to be, like, annoying, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I've got green on the screen with me. I've got Grogu, my curtains. I've got
Tingle.
Aquamentus.
That's right.
Got some other Koroks in there somewhere.
Koroks there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we got, like, green all over our overlay here, too, if you're watching us live on twitch.tv/TheZeldaCast, which you should be doing.
Don't pinch us.
Yeah, don't pinch us. It is St. Paddy's Day, and... yeah, I hope that everyone out there is maybe enjoying a green beverage or two and having a great old time. And I guess I should also say that most people listening to this are going to be listening on Monday when this show is released on podcast form. So
yep.
I hope you're doing okay today. If you need something to help you out, we're going to try and provide you with that. So we are going to be talking finally about... Horizon Forbidden West. So this is a kind of inspired by Zelda show. So we're going to be talking about Horizon and specifically how it kind of compares and contrasts to Tears of the Kingdom, because they're both big open world sequels to really successful open world games. But before we do that, I've got some plugging to do, Al.
Yes, go for it.
All right. So I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. I'm going to mention it one more time. The first... ever, the debut episode of my brand new show, The Spiteries Review, is now out on podcasting platforms. We're just in the final touches of getting over to Apple. We're on Spotify. We're on Podbean. You can go and check it out. My wife, Samantha, and I have been doing the show for a while. It's been a Patreon-exclusive podcast, but we decided... hey, the show's pretty good, actually. Let's bring it to the masses. And we released... like an epic, like a, my God, this is like Titanic length epic, almost 3 hours debut episode.
Wow.
On The Sopranos. So if you're a fan of The Sopranos, if you're a fan of my podcasts, you should definitely go and subscribe and check this out. The goal is to do the show monthly. We're going to try and stick to that. So it's going to be a monthly show. And not exactly gonna, you know, etch that in stone, but yeah, we're gonna have new episodes out every month, and it's just gonna be, excuse me, about different things that we're watching or whatever. So yeah, you can look forward to that. Lots of cool different stuff. There's a lot of movies that I usually wouldn't watch, or some movies that Sam usually wouldn't watch, and there's some mix of both. So give us a follow, give us a like, give us a sub, and hey, join our Discord too. I very selectively opened it up, and I invited only a few people. I didn't want to spam anybody with like a Discord invite link or whatever, but if you want it, let me know. I'll send you one, and yeah, come and chat with us and talk about the podcast and stuff like that. It's a small but cool little community that we got going on so far. So excited about that. And the best thing is I told Samantha that she has to like participate in the Discord. She has to talk to people. So well, she's not very.
I wonder if she's like me, where I kind of am awful about talking to people in Discord. So
I have to be careful because she's in the chat right now, but like she's so bad at Discord. She's like, how does this work again? Like what? Huh? She's had it for 7 years. She's had it since 2017. And like, wow. I just showed her how to use it the other day. I hope she's not listening now anymore. She usually shuts me off after a couple minutes when we do the Zeldcast. But yeah, we're our new podcast is out. And I'm really proud of it, so you should go and check it out. And, oh boy, she's in the chat still. So, yeah, do it for me. Do it for me. Okay, that's my shilling. That's my shilling. Cool. Now,
I love it.
Let's get down to business here. Last night, I finally sat down and I completed the final boss of Horizon Forbidden West. And the time is now to finally talk about this game. And like I said, so this is going to be an Inspired by Zelda show. So obviously the bulk of the game, we're going to be talking about Horizon. But we are going to be also talking about Tears of the Kingdom a bit. Because I don't know about you, Al, but like when I was playing this game, I found it really hard not to compare this game to Tears of the Kingdom in terms of like an open world sequel and how it structures itself and how it makes itself different and it builds upon what came before that. Did you kind of have like the same kind of vibe?
I did. There were some things where I was like, I kind of wish Tears did this. And there were other things where I'm like, I understand why Tears didn't do this. It's kind of funny. We'll talk about it when we probably get more into like story spoiler stuff, but I feel like the two games are on two opposite spectrums, like kind of extremes. Like one is a lot of showing and implying, and one is of a lot of telling. And it's not everybody is the audience for that. I am personally, but I know not everybody is. So yeah, we'll get more into detail about that. But for the most part, I was like, there's a lot of similarities too. There's a lot of like story beats, like playing game, like gameplay style that is similar. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, well, me too. And I guess before we get going, I will say this. So we're going to keep the, I don't know, let's call it the first half of this show, like kind of general. There's not going to be any spoilers. We will get into spoilers like in regards to the story, because I feel like that's such an integral part of this game. Mm-hmm. But we'll give a big, loud, noisy spoiler warning beforehand when we do. So if you want to dip out then and you haven't played Horizon Forbidden West, please feel free. Come back and listen after you've beat the game, if you're going to play the game. And you should play the game because it's really awesome.
You should. It's so good. It's so good. I love these games so much. And it's like, I feel like they were done dirty the years that they came out.
Yeah, kind of, a little bit.
Yeah.
By the way, okay, I know I said I was done plugging, but I'm never really done plugging. So on our Patreon, which you can sign up for over on patreon.com/SPNet, I think I'm losing it, Al. We just did a show about the top 10 Zelda-likes of all time, actually. Mm-hmm. And Horizon Zero Dawn was on my list, so go and check that out and get some other good recommendations for, you know, some other games that you can play if you're waiting for the next Zelda to come, because Lord knows when that's going to be. Although I think it's going to be soon. All right, let's talk about this game. So obviously Horizon Forbidden West is a sequel to Horizon Zero Dawn. And I think that there's, you kind of mentioned it, there's two trains of thought that you can have when you're making a sequel like this. Mm-hmm. One is same world, new gameplay. We know what game did that. Two is pretty much identical gameplay, new world. And that's the route that Forbidden West takes. You don't really explore the old area like at all in this game.
No.
Like, which, and I think that the game is better for that, actually.
Yeah, I would say that. I'll be really honest, though. There's a difference because I've only played Zero Dawn once, so re-exploring that world might not have been as hard of a hit as it was between Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. Because I played Breath of the Wild a lot. A lot of people play Breath of the Wild a lot. So exploring a similar world, I wouldn't say it's 100% the same, because obviously they had made changes that were enough for me personally to take it to the next level. But having pretty much the same world in Tears kind of hurt it a little bit. Whereas if we did go back, technically in Zero Dawn, the area is Colorado. It's like Colorado 1,000 years in the future, right? So if we were exploring Colorado again, I probably wouldn't have recognized a lot of the spots except for maybe the main towns.
I agree with you, but I will say, like, you know, imagine that we were really, imagine we had a Horizon podcast, right? And like,
yeah,
I think that we'd be, or at least I'll speak for me, I would be disappointed if like you returned to that same world and right. re-explored that. Now, I guess like, I always kind of like thought that Horizon Zero Dawn was a much smaller game than Breath of the Wild. And I think it is.
I think
that Forbidden West is also a smaller game than Tears of the Kingdom, even though it's like a huge game.
Yeah, it's much bigger than Zero Dawn, but it's still smaller than Tears and Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. So I was almost wondering if we were going to be able to go to both areas in this game, like revisit the old areas and like go to the new area. We didn't, but I think that's fine, because like this game, I have some critiques of Forbidden West, of course, and one of them is like it's almost too big sometimes, but I do, yeah, like I personally appreciated that they were like, okay, instead of relearning some gameplay mechanics, we figure that fans of the first game are going to be somewhat familiar with the second game, or familiar with how everything works, and just want to carry that knowledge over into the second game, and we're going to change the landscape. Which for me, like, I think that works a lot better for an open world game if you're going to do a sequel, to have a new open world, because I like, and I know people get upset when I say it, and I hear your comments, and I see the reviews, or whatever, but like, that was like a real, real big bummer to me about Tears of the Kingdom, was re-exploring the same world. I know that it was different, but I don't think it was different enough. And at least with Forbidden West, it was really different. And again, like, one of the really cool things that I love about the Horizon games is in the first game, you're kind of, they're hyping you up for like, what is Zero Dawn? What's Zero Dawn? And in this game, while it comes quicker, but they're like, They're really hyping up and mystifying the Forbidden West. Like, you're going to get to the Forbidden West. And it feels like a really cool accomplishment. Like, when you get there and you're just kind of like, oh, wow. Like, I'm in the Forbidden West now. And it's very cool. Yeah. Where I never quite got that same feeling when I went to the sky or when I went to the depths in Tears of the Kingdom, unfortunately.
I understand that feeling. I will say that, yeah, being in a new area was cool. In Forbidden West, obviously, it takes place west of Colorado. So Utah, Nevada, and California. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. This is a new kind of region, area, etc. But I do think that it also still kind of looked a lot alike compared to Zero Dawn. Like, it still looks similar. It still was very deserty. That's a very deserted, I don't know, desertous.
Deserty?
Is the right word.
Deserty
area.
Sandy?
And until you get to, obviously, the far west. But so it still kind of looked a lot of the same. It just, what really changed it was the people that lived there. It didn't have in the original area, there was the Carja. That's, they rule that area. In the west, it's the Tanakh. So that was the change that I was like, okay, this is a cool change. I appreciate that there's different culture, there's different visuals, but the landscaping was very similar to me.
Yeah, definitely in some areas, you're right. It was like very foresty, of course, but I do think that, like you said, like there was enough, like like San Francisco, I thought was awesome, like the tropicalness.
Yeah, San Francisco was really cool.
The desert was great. And I don't remember, like, to me, like, so in between the Forbidden West and where you start the original, like, Zero Dawn game, there's an area called No Man's Land. That, to me, felt pretty similar. But I think once you kind of got out of No Man's Land, then it kind of was a little bit more new. It felt a little bit more new. And mostly that No Man's Land part is, like, part of the prologue. So, like, I was okay with, like, it looking and feeling a little bit, like, again, like, I'm okay with, like, some stuff being familiar, right? It's just when the whole world is familiar, then it's just kind of like, this was a little bit of a swing and a miss for me.
For you. Yeah, I understand that. I want to validate that for some people, because a lot of Hyrule, at least the overworld, the surface, is very similar. But I do feel like they did enough that I did feel like, and I'm replaying the game, and I still feel like I'm exploring new territory. There's parts where I'm like, okay, I'm on the surface, I don't want to be here because I've been here before. But then I'll get to the caves and the depths and the sky and the volcanoes all dried up. So it's in a way, I think it's Tears could have gone a little bit more. We could have gone to a different world. But in the end, I think it also would have been very similar still, like it was between Zero Dawn and Forbidden West. Like, yeah, we could have explored a different world, but probably they would have very similar climates. They would probably have a snow area, a desert area, a volcano area, because that's kind of how Zelda is.
Yeah.
So I feel like even though Forbidden West did take us to a new area, it still felt similar. And I think if Tears had taken us to a new area, it still would have felt similar to Breath of the Wild.
You know... I don't know if I agree with that. Like, I agree partly with what you're saying. I think if we had gotten a new Hyrule or a new area in Tears of the Kingdom, you're probably right. There's going to be your snow. It's going to be your fire area. There's like all of those staples are going to be there because that's just environmental storytelling. But I don't, for me, this is what it boils down to, right? Like, would you rather have a new world or the same world but changed? And my answer is always going to be a new world. For an open world game, like, I value that a lot. Mm-hmm. So I would have taken that new world, even if it's going to, like, as you correctly point out with Forbidden West, like, some of it does feel familiar, but new enough, right? Like,
yeah.
And then, like, there's lots of the parts of Forbidden West map that are completely new and complete, like, really these amazing pieces. So... Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying. I don't know if I agree. It's not that I don't agree, but I feel like that doesn't do it for me personally. But like each and every person has that own different sliding scale, right? Where it's just like,
yeah.
Okay, this is too familiar, but like, you know, so.
Yeah, I agree. I'm cool with that, with us agreeing to disagree a little bit.
I can't believe that. Before we started the show, I was like, Al, how well do you know me? Who's one of my favorite singers ever? And she is talking Selena... We didn't even figure out who the Selena is, did we?
OG Selena. People know who that is.
No, does anybody know who OG... When I hear Selena, yeah, I think Selena Gomez. Yeah, they do.
She died really tragically.
Okay. Not Selena Dion.
Not to get, like, really, like, down on this show.
God. This is, like, the third time she's no-sold my Selena Dion joke. That's a funny joke. All right. Let's continue here. So I want to talk about the story specifically later when we get to the spoiler section. But this story in this game is awesome.
It's great.
Awesome. But it's told awesomely. Like, it's structured in a way that makes sense. Things happen one after the other after the other. The sequence of events and, like, the pacing of the story is everything I wanted from Tears of the Kingdom. And they refused to give us. And they were so committed to, like, you could do the story in any order. You could do anything in any order that you want, that it hurt the game for me. And I think you would agree with that. Like, this game proves, like, just the tiniest bit of structure goes a long way. Because you can still do your main story quest, but you have, like, a gluttony of other side quests that you can do, other options, that, like, things to do, right? Like, you don't have to, if you don't want to, do the main quest. And, like, there's so much to do in Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild that I just, like, sometimes it boggles my mind that they didn't go that road. And it would have been really easy to, because both Horizon, Forbidden West, obviously specifically, and Tears of the Kingdom have these, like, amazing set piece moments. But, like, it's just, in Tears of the Kingdom, I felt like it was kind of, like, taken away when you got to the climax, because I was like, oh, here we go, the same cutscene and the same thing. Where Horizon, I felt like it kept on kind of building on top of each other. So I really, really, really loved the way that the story was structured here, and that's one thing that I think Tears of the Kingdom could have really used.
Yeah, I personally still feel like the lack of structure and linearity, that there's a consequence to as much freedom as they gave us in Tears of the Kingdom. Obviously, I'm replaying it now, and I'm taking it slowly. I'm taking it as in order as I possibly can. Like, I'm looking for all the clues. and that's going to tell me like exactly the order that I'm supposed to play this game so that the story is sequential the way it's meant to be told.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I should have to work that hard, to be honest. Feel like the clues are there, but I'm like, my eyes are peeled for them. And obviously a first time player is not going to be that focused on trying to get the thing in order because they're like, oh, I have freedom. I can go do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
Forbidden West does this thing where they do let you go to any area that you want. So pretend they have divine beasts. They do have like these main phenomena that you need to go check out. And so you do have the choice to go to whatever one you want, but they heavily hint that maybe if you're not a higher level, it's not a good idea to go there because it's going to be hard. They also have the different areas be different enough that they coincide to the story in the end, but separately they don't hurt the fact if you do them out of order. There's different people involved. There's different...
It's very situation. A Link Between Worlds kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's done where they give you some freedom, but they still have it structured in a way that towards the end, the story is still told in a linear fashion and it makes sense versus giving you a whole bunch of freedom. Everything gets out of order. You have to try really hard to see the hints to do it in order, etc. And then also, there's something I really wanted to talk about is the continuity. They have massive amounts of continuity between Zero Dawn and Forbidden West. It's seamless. You don't have to guess about anything. And, you know, sometimes people get offended and are like, we don't need it explained to us. We don't need the story, like, you know, drilled into our heads. But sometimes, especially with this story for this game, like it's very complicated.
Sequel? Yeah.
Yeah. It's very complicated that I do need it because it's very scientific, too. I do need it explained to me. And I do like how they go about it. You can ask questions. You can decide how much information you want. If you don't want that much information, you want to guess for yourself, go for it. But you can get all the information that you want from each character as you go.
Yeah, I agree. I do. I really love the fact that it's seamless. And they give you a really, really fantastic, like, a video intro at the very beginning that kind of helps you understand and get caught up because it's been a long time between games, just like it was for Breath of the Wild and for Tears of the Kingdom. So that's really good. They have like a complete archive of like who these characters are and give you some Cole's notes and stuff like that. It's a very good system that they do and they help you along definitely like get the most of your experience and the most of your, like the most of your gameplay and whatnot. And the story is told in a very, like it really is. It's very seamless. It's very easy to pick up right where you left off. So I appreciated that as well. And, you know, I know that some people have taken umbrage with our comments where it's like, it feels like nobody remembers the events of Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it really feels like everything you did in the first game mattered in Forbidden West. Like, people know who you are, they hear legends about you, your deeds matter, and you're building on top of what you've already done. So yeah, it feels like that was something I really appreciated as well, particularly in Forbidden West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, I think overall the story was structured a lot better. I appreciated the new world versus staying in the old world. And people listening are probably going to infer that I think that Forbidden West is a much better game than Tears of the Kingdom. I don't actually know if I would agree with that necessarily, because Forbidden West does have its faults, for sure. But but it does some things that I think an open world sequel should do, and I think Tears of the Kingdom should have done. And those are really important things that it does.
Yeah, and to be fair, they are two completely different games. Like, the amount of story that they have to tell you in Forbidden West is because it's a massive story. And it's like, it's really messes with your mind. It makes you think. Whereas Zelda, you're like, this is a Zelda adventure. Like, I like the plot twist that we got in Tears of the Kingdom. I just, there's some points where I was like, it's kind of obvious what the plot twist is. Whereas in Forbidden West, you had no idea what was coming. And when it did, you were blown away.
Yeah.
And although I will say that there are, like you mentioned, story beats in Tears that I was also blown away by, there's just a couple things I was able to guess because of getting things out of order. But, like, yeah, it's it's hard to get out of like the comparison trap between the two games, but they are two completely different games. I do like them each in their own bubbles. It's just that they both happen to be the same thing, where they're a direct sequel to a massive open world game. So it's kind of hard not to compare them a little bit. I just want people to understand that it's not, we're not saying Tears is an awful game because it didn't do what Forbidden West did. You know, obviously.
Yeah, no, that's not the inference at all. But it does do some things that I wish Tears of the Kingdom had done. And I think if Tears of the Kingdom had done these things, I'd like Tears of the Kingdom a lot more than I do. And you know, as we get kind of closer to the 1 year anniversary, we'll really dive in and get back into Tears of the Kingdom. But yeah, you know, like there were some things that I wish Tears had done differently, and it really kind of shone a light on those things playing Forbidden West, because Forbidden West does those things.
Right.
Now, again, I would I say it's a better game than Tears of the Kingdom? I don't think so. But like,
I don't think so.
I also expect a lot more from Zelda because of the pedigree of the series, right? Like, and this is a second entry into a new series. So I feel like I also have a little bit more leeway for Horizon. Maybe I shouldn't, but I do. So yeah, I want to talk about some of the new machines in this game. I love the machines in Horizon. I think that like, it's basically like a Jurassic Park game almost, but with like mechanical dinosaurs that I think is like absolutely fantastic. And some of the new machines in this game, whew, they were so awesome. They were like, cool. Oh my God. And you don't see a lot of them, but like, man, they were so cool. So there's a few here that and they really lean into like the dinosaur aspect. So there's like a Clawstrider, which is like a Velociraptor. It's just like a legit a Velociraptor. It doesn't pretend it's not anything like that, which is awesome. You can get a Bristleback, which is kind of like a wild boar almost, and you can mount them.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, like a giant wild boar.
One of the new, I don't even know what this is supposed to be, some kind of dinosaur, but it's called a Rollerback. It's kind of like that dinosaur. Yeah. Okay, you're right. I was going to say...
A giant, scary, terrifying armadillo that's trying to kill you.
When I was a lad, I had a toy dinosaur, and it was like... It's almost like a Stegosaurus, right? But like, instead of like the spikes on the back, it had spikes on the side. You know what I mean? Like, does anybody know what dinosaur I'm talking about? Somebody's going to know. Let me know over in Discord. But it kind of looks like this dinosaur. This one was awesome. The Shell Snapper was like this giant turtle thing. And this was a tank. Oh my God. This thing was... But let's talk about the big boys here. The Slitherfang is this amazing, ginormous python. And you fight the Slitherfang a few different times in the game. And it is absolutely unbelievable. All of the set pieces in Horizon are awesome. Like the story set pieces. The Slitherfang is awesome. Yeah. The Sunwing is... Oh my God. The Stormbird, actually. That is an intense, scary beast. And it flies around. And it's super, super scary. You've got the... I remember the first time I saw the Tide Ripper in Las Vegas, which we'll talk about. That I was like blown away. That was majestic.
Okay. I'm glad it was majestic for you, because we'll talk about it in Vegas.
Yeah, so this is like the Loch Ness Monster, right? Like it looks like that thing in Hazy Maze Cave in Super Mario Bros. 64, except a giant scary dinosaur.
Keep in mind that Allison is afraid of the ocean and the things in the ocean. So being with a giant machine monster in the ocean or like in the water was not fun for me.
You're afraid of the ocean?
I'm afraid of big bodies of water because I don't know what is going on in there, and I don't like the idea of being in it and having things be around me. It freaks me out.
How did you like our episode of Titanic on this Spiteri's review?
I haven't listened to it yet, but I like that movie. But the idea of it is terrifying. Yes.
The Tremor Tusk. There we go. The Tremor Tusk. So the big
elephant.
A big woolly mammoth with like four gnarly...
Made me think of the Oliphants from Lord of the Rings.
Me too.
Yeah.
The designs in this game are so awesome. And they look awesome. And they sound fantastic. And each one of them is super scary. I can't remember. Were the Spectres in the first game as well?
The Spectres were not, because they are... Sorry, spoiler. I don't want to talk about that.
A different type of machine. But yeah, those were pretty gnarly too, which we'll talk about when we get to spoilers. The machines in this game are so awesome. Like they just look and sound so absolutely fantastic.
You have that one listed. There's my favorite of the new ones. I can't remember what it was called. It was like a silent something, and it was all about noise.
Yeah, it's the Stalker.
I can't.
Is that right?
No, not the Stalker. That's the one that turns invisible. But there's this one. It's massive, like the Thunderjaw. And it's it messes with your hearing. So it does this really weird buildup in the music, and it's like really ominous and really, and you're just like trying, like panicking to take down the thing before like that music peaks and like, you know, all of a sudden your hearing's jacked. I don't know if you remember those, but those were like awesome. And the music that played while you were fighting them was awesome.
You know what? I don't, to be honest with you. We'll try and look up what that is, because I'm sure you're probably right. I'm sure it was awesome.
Yeah.
But like, just I'm just cause so continually impressed with like how these machines look, sound, function. I think it's like such an achievement, and they look so unbelievable that it's just like, I think that's a big part of my enjoyment of Horizon, is like it's futuristic meets like Cretaceous period. It's so awesome that I wanted to shout out a few of them, because I feel like the machines themselves play like a little bit of a lesser role in this game as compared to like some of the other things that you encounter, but I love them. And actually, one of the new things that you could do, just to kind of, I guess, get over to another portion of what I want to talk about, is now you can mount machines and you can fly on specifically some of the machines as well. And I will say this, and tell me if you agree or not, but I don't quite think that flying on the machines in Horizon gave me the same kind of rush as flying on like a Zonai device in Tears of the Kingdom. So I will say that, like, there's something about being in the sky, because you're so far up in Tears of the Kingdom. Mm-hmm. Like you're far up in this game, but you're not that far up. But there's something about that was just like, holy cow, like this is crazy.
And on top of that, it's like early on where you can start exploring the sky with the Zonai devices. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Forbidden West, it's like the end of the game when you can finally start flying. You can mount a lot of different machines. You could do that in the first game too, as far as like riding on land, but you couldn't fly in the first game. And then also, I mean, we could talk about the paraglider, too. You get a paraglider in Forbidden West, which is cool, but it also is not the same as it is in Tears in Breath of the Wild.
You could just use it all you want. Like, it just stays there. Like, you could just fly to Eventide Island on that bad boy. Like, no problem.
Whereas the one in Forbidden West, you're very, like, it's, I don't even know. It's like a shield, like this ray shield that you're floating on, but you're so heavy as a person that it brings you straight to the ground, really.
Yeah, it's like in Tears, you have like your paraglider, and you mostly stay consistent if you're sailing, if there's wind behind you. But yeah, in Horizon, you're heavy. There's no stamina limit, so you can just keep on floating and floating and floating. But you go down rather than like across, for sure.
Like a glide, yeah.
Yeah. Which I guess is maybe how like that should work, I think.
I think it was fine, and it definitely helped when you got up in high places, and then Aloy was like, I could just glide down from here, and so you did.
Yeah, I know that drove me nuts. All right, well, while you're looking for that machine, let's talk about something else that that Horizon Forbidden West did that I was really, really confident and disappointed that Tears of the Kingdom did not do, and that was introduce underwater exploration and swimming.
Yeah.
I thought, so like, no swimming controls are ever perfect, and there was definitely some clunky moments in Forbidden West, but I do think that, like, on the whole, swimming was pretty seamless and enjoyable. And like, so basically the way that you swim, you hold a button that makes you go forward, and then you can just control like where you're going with, by, you know, for focusing your camera, like, basically is the way to do it, and like directing your dual analog to, you know, make Aloy go forward or whatever. So I thought that it worked well. And I thought that like exploring the world underwater, very cool, added a different type of element. I personally would have taken this over like the cave system, because like once you've kind of seen one cave, you've seen a few, you know, if not all. But I don't know, there's something just like so intense about underwater exploration, specifically before you get the infinite like breathability, the infinite air. I don't know.
Yeah,
you have to, you stop worrying about oxygen at some point when you play Forbidden West.
So here's the thing. Here's the cool thing that Forbidden West does. They have a thalassophobia relief function, which I chose because I don't know if I have full-blown thalassophobia, but it's close.
Can you tell the listeners and maybe me what the hell thalassophobia is?
That's the fear of big bodies of water. Okay. That's like the legit fear of it, you know? Anyways, they have that option. Kind of like how some games are having like the arachnophobia relief option nowadays, where you could turn that off and the spiders in games aren't as scary. But yeah, because I was worried about the underwater exploration. Like, I love the idea of it, but it does freak me out. So I was like, this gives me a little bit larger scope of what I can see, I think, compared to what you were able to see, which I appreciate. And then also, I didn't have to worry about breathing, but it did bar me from areas until I got the unlimited breathing ability later. And
yeah,
so it did say like I didn't have the item that I couldn't go there yet, but technically I didn't have an issue with breathing the whole time I was playing, so that relieved me from stress a little bit. I will agree that like exploring underwater was really cool. It was really intense. It was at the point where I was like, okay, I feel safe. But then when the robots started getting in the water, I was like, it's really freaking me out. And then also when you get to the ocean in San Diego, that freaked me out more. So it's really cool. And I do wish that Zelda had it. I just know I would have been stressed either way. And I can't believe you said you'd rather have underwater exploration than caves. I like 100%. The caves.
Like, you see one cave, you kind of seen them all. I think
they're
like
really fun. I love them.
I mean, to each their own, but I thought for sure we were going to see underwater exploration in Tears of the Kingdom. I thought that was a big miss, how we didn't see that. But maybe the next game, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, you bring up a good point, actually. There's something that I didn't jot down, but maybe should have. There is a crazy amount of accessibility options in Horizon Forbidden West, and the game is much better for it. Like, there is tons and tons and tons of options, both in like how you can customize your HUD in terms of like some things. Like you mentioned, there are some sensitivities that you can get rid of or reduce. Mm-hmm. Really, really like great job by the developers in order to like give everybody like a lot of different accessibility options. I think that that's like very, it should be a standard, I feel like, now in like big budget games, and it's not yet. And I think that Guerrilla was leading the way with this game in that regard.
Mm-hmm. I like to, a lot of games are doing this as well, as you can adjust the brightness levels of your screen of your game. So it like, it tells you like adjust the brightness until you can see the whites, adjust the shadows until you can see the shadows. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool for everybody's different like vision, and everybody's different TVs that they're playing on, because something that we've complained about in OG Twilight Princess is some of the Twilight bits are way too bright and I'm like blinded, you know? So I think they fixed that in the HD version, but a lot of games are doing that nowadays, and I think it's really cool, because something I've noticed in the gaming industry and the like filming movie show industry is like a lot of the dark portions are too dark for me now. I can't see anything.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that I could brighten those parts up.
Yeah, like I think like the more accessibility options you have, the better everyone is for it, and the easier it is for lots of different types of people to enjoy your game. I constantly get beat up about this, but like I wish that like the Souls game had accessibility options. Make it easy for schmucks like me who aren't good at those games.
An easy version.
Yeah, like why not?
I choose easy on this game and it was still hard. So
did you? I chose like regular, and I thought that this game was difficult.
It's pretty rough. Also, I
felt like consistently underleveled like the whole game.
I did too.
What's your machine called?
Slaughter Spine. It didn't have anything to do with Silent, but it
the
sounded...
Slaughter Spine.
Right? That sounds intense.
God. Slaughter Spine. Yeah, you know what? This was a pretty gnarly-looking beast.
Those were rough battles.
Yeah. I think there was a few that we left off, actually, on that list, but the Slaughter Spine was there. The Behemoth was one. I don't remember that from Zero Dawn. There's a few big beasties that you were just like, ooh. Mm-hmm. Scary looking bloke for sure. Speaking of sound, actually, I felt that the music was pretty good in this game, like quite good. I wouldn't say it was great, but it was good. It was good enough where it needed to be. I do think that you did hear one of the same themes a lot, mm-hmm. like in like boss battles and stuff like that. So I don't know how much music there actually like was, because I feel like you did kind of hear like the same themes a lot, but the music that you did hear was good. It was certainly adequate. It was I kind of felt like it was a bit more I don't know how to describe this. Like in Tears, in Breath of the Wild is very, very ambient, where this was like more like traditionally video gamey music. You know what I mean? I thought the music was solid.
I was actually going to say the opposite. Like obviously with Tears, you do have the ambience, but you do have like noted themes that I could list off, you know, I could list all those themes. I couldn't say the same about Forbidden West. I just do know that there was a few that I was like, oh my God, these are really great pieces of music. And they were usually different. So like the music that played during like the intro where Aloy is riding from the Karja territory to the Tanakh territory, there was like lyrics and stuff. That was incredible. There was that very music-driven village. I can't remember what they're called at this point. Where Zoe is from. Their music was really cool. Was it?
Plainsong. Yeah.
They sounded very Elvish from Lord of the Rings to me. And then there was also the last, not the last long neck or tall neck, but the tall neck in San Francisco in the water. When you're trying to get that tall neck, there's this really cool score going on. Those are the three that I remember the most. The rest are kind of like background. If I heard them, I'd recognize them, but otherwise it's kind of like they weren't as recognizable as those.
You know, I better amend what I said because you are right, actually. Like what I was referring to is more so like when you're just like exploring the wilds. When you get to a town, though, like none of the towns really have their own identifiable themes.
Right.
And I think Tears in Breath of the Wild does a better job of that. But I think like the ending song was really nice. There's a few songs in there. I'm still making up my mind if I like video games that have like songs in them, you know, like it's got to be like the right game and the right song. And I think that the song itself is nice here, but it takes me out of it a little bit when I hear like in Death Stranding, for example, Hideo Kojima game, like there's all this like random music. He just puts a music that he likes in the game. So it's like, on one hand, it kind of fits because everything is weird anyways. But like on the other hand, it's like, why is this playing? And I guess I almost kind of feel the same where it's like, I don't know. It takes me out just a bit. I almost would rather just have like a good just like orchestra, but nevertheless, like I thought that the music was fine. I wouldn't say it's a strength, but it certainly wasn't weakness.
I would say that Tears did a way better job on evolving music between Breath of the Wild and Tears, like the sequels, because I don't remember a thing from Zero Dawn's music, and I barely remember anything from Forbidden West, but music in Breath of the Wild and Tears is very memorable.
Yeah, like I on one hand, I'm like, well, you know, like we're part of Zelda Dungeon. We do a weekly Zelda podcast. Like, of course, it's going to be more memorable. But you're probably not wrong either.
Yeah, because I bet you if like two not diehard fans of either game series, they would still be able to tell you like, oh, I understand Stable theme. I understand Hateno's theme. And if I asked them for any music from Forbidden West, they probably wouldn't be able to name anything.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I think that's fair. And I would agree with that, too. Like, I'd probably say the music in general. Like, there's better singular pieces in Tears and Breath of the Wild. But, like, again, like, I wouldn't say it's a weakness of Forbidden West. I think that the music is quite good. It blends in a different way that's not, like, ambience. Yeah. Okay, this is, let me get into some critiques here. So I think I experienced this a little bit more than you did, because I was playing on the PlayStation 4.
Okay.
But this game is full of bugs, full of glitches. Okay. Not, like, bad glitches, but, like, like lots of, like, weird animation things with Aloy's hair specifically. And then, like, there's another ongoing glitch where, like, you would complete a melee pit challenge, but it says that you're not complete. And it would keep on defaulting you back to this stupid challenge. And, like, it's been almost 2 years since this game came out, and this glitch is still there. I was researching on Reddit. I was complaining to you one night, and I was like, how is this not fixed? And, like, there's a few other things like that persist throughout the game. And glitches, like, even in the final boss yesterday, I was losing my mind, Al, because I was fighting the final boss. And I was, like, slamming down to drink a potion. And Aloy would go like this and start drinking and then stop. And I was like, I'm about to die. You gotta drink this potion.
I do think that the healing system is very finicky. It was in Zero Dawn 2. I don't like it. If you don't hold down the button the right way, it's not going to work, and then you could die.
Yeah.
Sometimes it decides to do it by itself, and you're like, no, I'm not ready for it to do it. I need, like, it's just, I don't like the healing system in that game. It's not good.
Yeah, so that the healing system, no good. Lots of bugs. You would never see this level of bugs in a Zelda game, ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Anything pop up on your end, or am I just, like, am I playing the peasant version? And that's why?
No. I agree. There was some stuff that was weird. I did see, like, if I played it too long, like, you know how you can, like, leave it open and, like, even turn off the system, turn on the system again.
Yeah, you come back and you just resume.
Yeah. If I left it on too long without resetting the game, the characters' movements and their, like, mouth movements would not match their speech.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, they lagging. And also they would start, like, Aloy and the character would start looking off in weird directions. And I'm like, what are you looking at? Why aren't you looking at the person that you're talking to?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, they're bugging a little bit. So that was something that I noticed. There is a lot going on. So, like, Aloy's hair is... If it can be right, I did notice that there were times where I was like, I'm like, if it can be right, that's awesome, because there is a lot going on with Aloy's hair. You know, to be fair, Link's hair, there's not a lot going on with, you know, and other characters.
It's either down or it's up.
Yeah.
Down or up.
It's very simple, but Aloy's got a lot of hair going on, so I can understand why it bugs out a lot. I was okay with that. But yeah, there was stuff that bugged me, but at the same time, like, I feel
nothing
like it
game
wasn't
breaking.
As nothing game breaking. Yeah. It wasn't as bad as, like, the latest Pokemon game, where I really had issues with how much that game was breaking. Wasn't anything like that.
Yeah, these were more just kind of like annoying, like, things, or, like, you know, Aloy's hair would be phasing in and out of reality, and, like, it was like, that's weird.
Eyes rolling into the back of her head. It's fine. Yeah,
it wasn't the only thing that really kind of got under my skin was the potion thing. Because it happened. You're right though. That's more of a fault of, like, the healing system in general. It's not a good system. You have to, like, you have to scroll through, like, a million gajillion things to get your potions, and, like, it's not good. But
one of the other flaws that I will bring up is, like, I know that Tears and Breath of the Wild had a lot of weapons, but once you got all the different types, you were like, I know that I have two-handed spears, one-handed weapon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And both. With Forbidden West, I don't remember this being as overwhelming in Zero Dawn, but Forbidden West, there's so many different weapon types, and they try to teach you how to use all of them. And I'm like, I'm just a bow and sword girl. I'm not going to use these weird disc slingers, these claw striders, these spikes that blow up. I'm not using those. It was too much. That was overwhelming, and I think that they were trying to, like, obviously have the same gameplay, but evolution, like, evolve it enough that it was, like, different. But I was like, no, I don't like it.
That's a perfect segue, actually, to my next critique of Forbidden West, and this isn't just a Forbidden West thing. This is, like, I would levy the same critique at Tears of the Kingdom too, but. And it's hard not to, because you want to get value from these ginormous open world games. But while I thought that Zero Dawn was, like, the perfect length, it was the right length, there was the right amount of things to do, I didn't feel like I was like, all right, I just want to get it over with and get it done. Because I'm someone that struggles with, like, if I don't 100% finish a game, I'm like, I feel like I left stuff on the table.
Right, same.
And in this game, I think fell victim to that, where it was just like they were putting stuff in for content and for added value. And it's like, I don't know that we need, like, the Vista Point side quests I thought were horrible. Like, that was a horrible thing.
It was worse in Forbidden West than it was in Zero Dawn. Zero Dawn was much easier to deal with.
They were way more difficult in this game. And I was like, we don't need this. Like, does anybody really want to race? Maybe they do, but, like, I don't need racing.
Okay, I like the racing though. I thought that was fun.
But you know what I mean? It's like, there's so much stuff to do. And, like, you open your map and there's, like, a gajillion markers and things.
Yep.
And they're I'm sure this is intentional, but they're all, like, somewhat close. So it's really easy just to go from, like, one marker to the next marker to the next marker to the next marker. And by, like, I don't know how many times, Al, I was just like, okay, I'm going to go finish this game. And I'm heading over there and I'm like, well, this is literally on my way. Maybe I should do this rebel camp, or like, this right. is like right here. Maybe I should get this flower or whatever. Right. Like there's too much.
And I would say that Tears had a little bit too much too. But it was like, I was able to have the motivation to finish it, I guess. And maybe that's just because I'm a bigger Zelda fan.
Yeah.
But in Forbidden West, it did start to feel like a chore. Like, a lot of the quests start to feel the same. There was a few that felt like the side adventures in Tears of the Kingdom. Like, if we kind of kept up that role where it was, like, side adventures, where it was substantial, you mm-hmm. felt integral to the what was happening with the actual story and the quest, cool. But there's a lot of, like, side items that I'm like, I really don't feel like doing this. It feels like a chore.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because this game does the same thing. It divides into, like, side quests, errands, and, like, just, uh-huh. like, meaningful tasks and, like, less meaningful.
The contracts, those were the guys who were making the armor. Didn't like that. I liked the armor at the end. That was super cool, but I didn't like doing it.
Man, I feel like I got, like, I did one of this guy's contracts. I was waiting for my armor. I felt like it never came, and I was like, where's my armor? And so I never did another one after that.
You don't get it until you do all of them. Literally, like, you have to do all of them.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? I'm not doing it. And that's probably why
it was a cool set of armor. There's
it probably would have helped me out in the final battle, because I was getting tossed around.
Yeah. There's, like, a lot of cool armor that they do that's similar to Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. Different, like, subsets that you could... I like the Tanakh, the Marshall armor. Yeah. I thought it was super cool. But yeah, so that's pretty similar, and it does different things. It's not, like, as involved with, like, survival and weather. It's more, like, what you mm-hmm. are resistant to, etc.
I think the armor, generally speaking, looks a lot cooler in Zelda than Horizon yes. 2. Like, they kind of blend together a little bit. Although, I really like the face paint. And it was really cool, because, like, you can get, like, you get the Pride face paint, too. Like, the free
downloadable one. Oh, that was cool, yeah.
I think I just had that on the whole time. I was like, oh, looks good enough for me. Let's go. Although it took forever to find someone that could actually put face paint on you. I felt like I unlocked a bunch of face paint, like, a long mm-hmm. time before I was actually able to, like, put it on.
Yeah.
I wanted, like, Surfer Sting or something. I don't know. yeah, so I have only a few other quick things here. I wanted to shout out some of the voice acting, actually. Because I think the voice acting is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Specifically, well, I mean, I guess what we should do, we have to shout out Ashley Birch, who does Aloy. She does a fantastic job. Although Aloy talks way, way too much in this game. My God, she will not shut up in this game. Like,
I understand how you feel, and it's mostly because she jabbers to herself.
God.
I get it. And I personally, there were times where I was like, okay, I don't need you to retell me what to do. Like, I'm back in tutorial land. I don't need that. But there were times where I was lost, and I really appreciated when she spoke up and said, maybe if I did this. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. Let's go do that. And it helped me.
You know what? Yes.
It's guided chatting.
There is... Sometimes it is helpful, but, like, the fifth time in, like, 1 minute when she's like, maybe my focus can help here, I'm mm-hmm. like, I get it!
That's annoying.
I'll get out my focus, annoying. Give me a second!
Like, that should be something that you can make, like...
that you can turn off!
You can turn off, like, the HUD, because I also don't like turning off the HUD. I like having all the business on the screen so I can
know what I'm doing. Get rid of it right away.
I like
do the same
knowing.
Thing in Tears, too. Like, I have as little on the screen as I can.
but that would be cool if you could kind of turn Aloy off a little bit, or maybe make her less tutorially, like, reminding you simple things.
Yeah,
that would have been appreciated.
I think that Aloy is a fantastic character, like a really strong great character, but there are some times too when I'm just like, she's a little bit too, like, awkward almost. And I get it, but, like, she has that, I don't know how to describe it other than, like, awkward, kind of, like, she's trying to sound awkward, you know? Like, she's like, well, you know, I guess we can do this. And it's like, you're a confident, awesome warrior. Just say, like, this is what we're going to do. I don't know.
I feel like she does do that. I don't know.
Sometimes.
I think the awkward situation is, like, social awkwardness, not like being a leader awkwardness. Like, she's a good leader, and she's very firm in what she's doing and, like, how to tell people what to do to follow her.
Yeah.
But, like, when she's, like, trying to be social, she is very awkward because she wasn't raised that way. She's also...
Fair.
I don't want to get into that spoiler either, but, like, she was raised a certain way. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to specifically shout out, the late, great Lance Reddick is so awesome in this game. He is so awesome. And we're going to talk about Silence when we start talking about spoilers, but, like, God, he's good. Isn't he? Like, he is so good in this game.
He is very good. Like, his voice is incredible. I don't know how we're going to continue.
He's such a prick to you.
It's like a lovable one. Like, I don't know. There's something about him that's so interesting, this character. And Lance brings in the life, really. Like, seriously, I don't know what we're going to do next without him.
That's tough. I think that Carrie-Anne Moss did a absolutely fantastic job as Tilda as well. Like, it's she had like a gravitas to her, you know, like an authority. I felt like she really and it took me a second to nail that. I as soon as I heard her voice, I was like, who is that? I know that voice. And it took me a couple minutes to just nail that down, but I thought that she was fantastic. And I think another one, a smaller role than I was maybe expecting, but a really good role nonetheless, was Angela Bassett as Regala. I thought that she really added like a fury to it.
It was so interesting when I heard Regala speak, and I was like, oh my God, that's Angela Bassett. And I was like,
is it Bassett or Bassett? I'm not sure.
I say Bassett.
Okay, I'll say Bassett.
She's in a TV show that I like that I've been watching for years. She's in Black Panther. She's just like, she's such a like a voice. Like, mm-hmm. her voice is undeniable. And she's such a good actor too, where her voice conveys a lot of emotion. So I was like, as soon as I heard her, I knew who it was. And I was like shocked that she was in this game, but like pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, she's awesome. What's the show that you watch?
She's in 911. It's the first responder show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has just like this, like, I can't think of a better word, but like this fury as Regala, mm-hmm. that I really loved. So yeah, we're almost to the spoiler section here. So why don't we just kind of recap and give our, actually, you know, I'm sorry. One final thing that I want to say about the story, spoiler, non-spoilery. I do think that, the twist of Forbidden West didn't quite do it as much as the twist of Zero Dawn and like finding out what Zero Dawn was to me, mm-hmm. but I still really liked, I liked the twist in this game. And I will say that this game also, I think you said this to me, but it was like, this is a lot more sci-fi than kind of like, what would you classify like the Carja stuff at, like fantasy almost, or...
Yeah, that was a bit fantasy.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, like, line that they cross, where because it takes place in a time where you think you're in the past, but you're actually in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, and then you wonder why the future looks like that. And then the sci-fi stuff tells you why the future looks like that. And it's just so interesting. And something I will say, non-spoilery, is like, I loved in the first game how this was like, it was not so outside the realm of pop. This could totally happen.
Yeah.
What happened to Zero Dawn. And we're so close, it's not even funny, to be honest. Like, seriously. But then in Forbidden West, it does kind of go outside the realm. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of...
I agree.
And I was a little sad about that, but that was just personal. And I came back around where I was like, this is still awesome, though. This is still way cool.
No, you know what? I 100% agree. Like, I'm a big sci-fi head, right? Like, and mm-hmm. for me, the best type of sci-fi is like... okay, in 1,000 years, I could see this happening, or like I could mm-hmm. see this being plausible, right? Like that's the type of sci-fi that I feel like really works. Whereas, this one was a bit over the top, and some of its sci-fi is, as we'll discuss in the spoiler section. But mm-hmm. you're right, though; it was still awesome.
I still wound up loving it, and I'm still like excited for how the story continues. I just slightly felt a little like, oh man, it kind of like. Now this is probably something that would never happen, you know? Like, obviously this isn't going to happen, but, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, so the last thing that I want to mention before we get to the spoiler section here, I think that this game, Forbidden West, is unfortunate. Like, while I don't know if I would say that it's as good of a game as Tears of the Kingdom, it's a worse game in a lot of ways, but this is the type of game I wanted Tears of the Kingdom to be. And it wasn't. And I almost feel like if you blended the two together, you'd have a perfect sequel. A perfect sequel.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Yes, I would agree with that. Like, if you took aspects that we think Tears did strongly and Forbidden West did strongly, blended them together, perfect sequel. I agree. Like, I think they're a lot similar than we're giving them credit for. Like, they both have a tutorial region that you kind of stuck on until you get finished your tutorial. Then you get to go on and have your big open world adventure. They both have very similar, like, you get to mess around with weapons, armor. They both have very similar where you fight the same things over and over and over again. And then you have these bigger regions of story and bosses, etc. Like, they're actually a lot more similar than we're giving them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they're also two very different games.
They are, but there are key differences, like in terms of, like, the story structure, in terms of the world, in terms of, like, and let's throw some bones Tears of the Kingdom's way, in terms of the really refined gameplay, in terms of the, like new but very accessible, like, gameplay mechanics that you can do.
Really fun gimmicks that are in Tears are way more fun to mess with than they are in Forbidden West.
Yep, I think that's fair. I think that Forbidden West has, like, a superb enemy design in terms of, like, the machines and stuff like that, whereas a lot of the enemies in Tears are really good as well, actually, but, like, kind of been there, done that. I feel like the two of them together, like, you take the best parts of that, and it's, like, just this amazing, amazing open world sequel. And, like, both of them have their flaws, but I think at the end of the day, I would prefer to go the direction that Forbidden West did rather than Tears. Like, warts and all, and, like, some of the issues that we talked about included, I think that's still my preference.
I think if it came to story, I would have liked it if Tears kind of took a hand, like, a page out of Forbidden West's book.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, like, I'm okay with what Tears did in, like, contrast to what Forbidden West did. Like,
right.
I still very much enjoy Tears. I still think it's a great sequel. It just could have had some things that helped it be like extraordinary. Like, it's amazing, but it needed just a couple things, like story structure, continuity, that I would have, like, considered this, like, the best sequel.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay, you want to talk about some of this spoilers, the story, and what have you?
Yeah, I guess so. Do we have time? Like,
it's our show. We have all the time in the world.
I
don't have to go in depth on any of them. I'm just going to give some notes on some characters, stuff like that. But
that's fine.
Okay, this is everybody's warning. We're an hour into the show. We're an hour into the show, and if you're still here, we're going to talk about spoilers for Horizon Forbidden West. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. You have been warned.
You've been warned
like 18
times. Don't get mad at us for saying anything. We've warned you.
If you're watching us on Twitch right now, you better close your browser. You better shut it off. Come back when you get it on PC if you don't have a PlayStation. All right, let's talk about this game. So, man, where do you even want to start? Should we start with, like, very generically some of the set pieces and work our way towards, like, the final, like,
Let's just kind of recap the basic premise.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. You go ahead. You got this?
Yeah, I got this.
Okay.
The machines, they were machines built for war. They gained consciousness and they were programmed to basically eat everything on Earth. So there's this woman, Elizabeth Sobeck. She is, you know, very genius. And she's like, how do I save the Earth? Well, I can't. How do I preserve maybe the future of the Earth? So that's what she does with the project Zero Dawn. She brings the greatest minds of the world together, and she's like, here's the seed to regrow the Earth after it's destroyed, right? 1,000 years later.
I'm gonna add some context to that. So there's this dude, Jeff Pharos, right?
Pharos
makes all these machines for war and then makes this huge blunder where, they program themselves to, like, they have to consume matter, which means that they consume, like, people and plants and stuff. So Earth is borked, and, Elizabeth sets up a project called Zero Dawn, which is using a lot of, like, AIs, and one AI to rule them all, which is Gaia.
And
9 subordinate functions of AI to do things like give us vegetation, to make machines, to preserve our history. And the one that preserves our history is missing. So that's why nobody remembers anything.
Well, the one that preserves history was actually destroyed by Pharos.
He
went mad, and he, like, basically went mad with the fact that he destroyed Earth. And he was like, this is a poison. This is a toxin. We don't need to teach the future Earth these things.
Yeah.
And the people are like, no, how do people learn from our mistakes? And he basically just wants to cover up the fact that he was the destroyer of Earth.
Right.
And he wipes the system. So that's why in the future, 1,000 years later, they're in this kind of tribal state instead of a futuristic world that you would expect.
Yeah, 100%.
So that's like the gist of
that was Project Zero Dawn. One important thing actually, which becomes important in this game, is in Zero Dawn, there was one of the AI subordinates was called Hades, and Hades' role was to essentially exterminate humanity if we started this, if the Zero Dawn project started but was not feasible. Like, the conditions weren't right or anything like that. So basically, Hades was supposed to reset everything so that we could try again. However, this weird, mysterious signal comes into contact with Hades and makes it go sentient and makes it go crazy. So Hades starts to try to destroy the world in Zero Dawn. And that's the final battle of Horizon Zero Dawn. You've got Silence in there, who is a very mischievous plan maker who seems to know more than he's sharing. And that's where we basically pick up in this game.
Yes,
after Hades has been destroyed.
6 months after Hades has been destroyed, Aloy is looking for Gaia, that AI who happened, like, in Zero Dawn. It's told that when Hades became sentient, Gaia was like, oh, shoot, this, what do I do? Basically, she created a clone with Elizabeth's DNA, that is Aloy, and then destroyed herself. So in Forbidden West, it starts off with Aloy trying to find a backup of Gaia.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where we are in Forbidden West. And yeah, so the game kind of starts off with you go through and you do the tutorial, etc. You meet some of your old friends like Varl and Erend.
Erend.
And so eventually you get to a base and you meet Gaia, who one of the subordinate functions was at this base. Minerva, I believe. And I can't remember what Minerva does, but
Minerva is the one that had the tower that that basically had the signal shutting down all the Pharaoh machines, because those machines were still rampant until Minerva and Gaia created a signal that shut them down. So Minerva is operating that signal.
I see. So you get to the base and you get to Gaia, and the world is like kind of like imploding on itself, because none of these subordinate AIs that you have, like one of them, it's supposed to regulate the climate. One of them is supposed to regulate the flora and fauna. One of them is supposed to regulate like the water purity, stuff like that. So you have to track down all of these different AIs in order to build up Gaia to eventually track down the most important AI subordinate feature, which is Hephaestus, which is what builds the machines. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool, because like, and this is where the game kind of lets you go and explore in different ways. And let's just start off really quickly. The first one that you do is the Bulwark, which is like this awesome, like, snowy mountain sequence where you have to like unite some of the tribes together, some of the Tanakh tribes, who are like these like really like warrior kind of tribes. This was so great. This was like, you fight the woolly mammoth here, you're breaking the Bulwark down, and you meet your main man, Cthulhu.
My main man, Cthulhu. I freaking love this man. He is so, like,
he's funny.
He's hilarious, but, like, in a really dry, like, he doesn't mean to be a funny way. And he's a warrior, a Tanakh warrior. He's one of, like, the esteemed warrior. He's a marshal, which are based off of a task force from 1,000 years in the past that they have, you know, they have revered in their culture. So he's like a very revered warrior. He loses his arm in a battle against Regala, who is holding a rebellion against the Tanakh because they wanted. There's a whole history.
There's like a Tanakh civil war going on here, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And he loses his arm, but you meet up with him at the Bulwark again, and you get to know him a little bit. And he's so great. I freaking, like, as soon as I started talking to him, like, initially, I was like, I love this man. And then you grow to become friends with him and Aloy, and then he kind of joins your crews. And I have loved this man ever since.
Yeah.
Like, he's great.
He's very dry. He's very funny. He's
very warrior, like, stoic. Like,
he's almost like Drax the Destroyer kind of vibes, hey?
A little
like, close?
Bit.
Yeah.
Maybe, but smarter. I would say smarter.
Drax definitely dumb. Smarter and less goofy, but like, kind of like dry, kind of like a
dry,
like, you don't want to cross this guy.
So
there's a Tanakh civil war going on. With on one side, there's Chief Ikaro, who wants to unite everybody, and then on the other side is Regala, who is like the former protege of Hikaru, but one that is really just filled with rage. There's a whole bloody history that is explored more so in Zero Dawn, which is the reason for that. And our man Silence, who is like a very key character here, has his own machinations that he's trying to, and he's trying to save the world in his own right, but he's very calculated and callous about it. And he's kind of pitting the two against each other and giving Regala the ability to override machines, which is a pretty big deal that only really he knows how to do, and I guess Aloy as well. So that's pretty cool. I thought that this was a great set piece, and you get one of the functions back, which was super awesome. We could talk. Do you want to move on to? I want to talk about Las Vegas.
Yeah, let's go to Las Vegas.
And so the second one, you get Poseidon in the desert of Las Vegas. This was so awesome because there's like all these neon lights and like it looks fantastic. There's underwater exploration. There's that amazing Loch Ness monster machine that you're just like, ah. This was so awesome.
Casino, like a flooded casino.
Yeah.
That's where you fight the Loch Ness monster. Mm. It's insane. Like, you meet like a group of Karja there, or not Karja, the other guys. Starts with an Osram.
These guys were dorks. They were.
Oh, okay. Listen, I love Moreland. I thought he was adorable. That he's the little tinker, the storyteller.
Yeah.
He's voiced by TJ Tyne, who I was like, as soon as I heard his voice, I was also like, I know who that is. And I was surprised to hear that. And I thought these guys were kind of sweet, but like, yeah, that you helped them basically get into the casino to get the lights, and they set up the lights of Vegas as they were in the days of old. And it's like really cool because when you're exploring around the desert, you can look around and see these like blaring neon lights of Vegas. It's so cool.
Yeah, it looks incredible. It looks awesome. This might have been my favorite sequence of the game, actually. It was so... like, just, I was really impressed. I love that. Along the way as well, you also meet, this clone of Elizabeth Sobeck, a clone, like, basically, think of it as Aloy's sister. Her name is Beta. We'll talk a little bit more about Beta, but she's important because she is being held captive by this group of people called the Far Zeniths. And Far Zenith, let me see if I can get this right. Correct me if I'm wrong. Okay. So on the last dying days of Earth, before everything was truly lost, there was a ship that went out into space, and it was only for the super, super rich people, like the 1%. Mm-hmm. They went on the ship. Think of the movie Don't Look Up with Leonardo DiCaprio. This is the same kind of idea. They go into space, but that ship is like basically destroyed right away. It explodes. Or so we think. What in actuality has happened is these people have developed some kind of technology to extend their life and to make them invincible and be able to like fly and be able to like, it's a little bit much to be honest, but like,
yeah, pretty, they have a thousand years to live. So that Far Zenith ship made it to the planet or the star Sirius, and they lived there for 1,000 years. As far as we're told at this point. And yeah, they create the, those other robots that you mentioned. I can't remember
the Spectres.
Spectres. They have the Spectre, machines. They have like a shield over their skin so they can't be hurt. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of scared. This is where it got to the point where I was like, oh, this kind of deep space stuff, I don't know, this is starting to sound a little weird.
They're basically Superman. Like,
it made sense to the story because like some of those people worked with Elizabeth Sobeck back in the day when she was creating Zero Dawn.
Yeah. So third set piece there is you're going to San Francisco. You're looking for the last supported function. And I think this is probably my least favorite one because there wasn't like... actually, there was a pretty cool machine battle with like this big bat. I forgot about the bat. Yeah. That was pretty cool. That's cool. But like, this one wasn't my favorite because like, I just didn't find it as cool as like the last two. And you have a really annoying character that tags along with you named Alva. I don't love, but we'll talk about that as much as we want in a bit. So then after that, you go to... So basically, you go to like the tomb of Pharaoh, and you're looking for this like this code that lets you, I don't know, like restart the system or whatever.
It's for Hephaestus. Hephaestus knows that the code that Aloy has as the clone of Elizabeth Sobeck. Hephaestus knows that code and has blocked himself from that code. Yeah. But there's another code by Pharaoh that you need to get.
Yeah.
Of course, Pharaoh in his dying days was like, I need to be the ruler of all. And he's like, he created a code more
creepy
alpha guy. than freaking Elizabeth Sobeck. He's
He has a tomb dedicated to him. Yeah, it's super creepy.
It's creepy. He creates a cult down there. It's weird.
I hated those guys that brought you there. I just wanted to like just shoot that one bloke.
That was
right
another
through the heart.
Cult group.
Yeah,
I'm sure we're gonna hear from them in the third game. But that was a group that came from like across the ocean. I don't know where. Maybe Hawaii. Maybe China. Australia. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they came to San Francisco looking for similar things, and they were a very cult-like group.
So the gist of the story is this. So like once you kind of get all the subordinate functions back, the Zeniths come back and they steal Gaia and they steal Beta, and everything looks hopeless. And, and so what you have to do then is basically work with one of the Zenith, who's a defector. Her name is Tilda, voiced by Carrie Ann Moss. And she's hatching a plan to basically eliminate all of the Zeniths, and they're just like, you know, we were on this planet, but we caused its own destruction, and now we want to come back to Earth, but we want to reset it. But Tilda doesn't want to let that happen, or so she says. I never trusted Tilda. I'm just gonna throw it out there.
I never did either. I didn't either.
So you get to the final battle, which is awesome. God, it's awesome. So Aloy and Beta hatch this plan to like finally have Hephaestus work on their side. So now you have machines working for you instead of against you. Finally, so there's like the Spectres versus all the machines going on, and like Silence is awesome, and he's found a way. He's cracked the code to like eliminate the Zenith shield, so like now you can finally take them out. Those Zeniths
I'm guessing because this didn't happen in my game. I'm guessing Regala shows up to help as well.
She did, yeah. Which we'll talk about in just a sec. But so basically, you go in and you take out all the Zeniths. You take out you get Beta back, but Tilda shows her true colors. She's just like, listen, what happened in our colony was not a natural disaster. We created something. We wanted to have a transcendent experience where we could just upload our memories digitally to any type of being, but we created a monster, and that monster's name is Nemesis. Nemesis destroyed our planet, and it's followed us ever since. And not only did Nemesis follow us, but it sent the signals that made Hades go wild, all the other subordinate functions go wild, and it's coming for Earth. And Tilda's like, Elizabeth Sobeck and I used to be lovers, and you, Aloy, are basically Elizabeth Sobeck. I regretted leaving all those years ago, and I'm not going to make that mistake again. You are coming with me. And you have the final showdown, because of course Aloy is not going to abandon the people of Earth. Man, this is a great show. This was hard. Holy frick.
It was very hard, and I was on easy mode. And Tilda, it was so interesting, because Tilda wasn't out to kill Aloy.
No.
She was just like trying to knock her out so she could basically kidnap her and take her to a new planet, use the new Gaia that you put back together to create a new Earth where Nemesis doesn't know, because Nemesis is just on course for Earth, basically.
Yeah.
And I just love the irony of the story that the people that escaped from Earth to another planet escaped one man's hubris, had their own hubris, destroyed their own planet, just like Pharaoh did to Earth. And it's just so interesting. I love this, I want to say a bad word right now. I love this ish so much. Like, this kind of storytelling is so much fun. It really gets in your brain and makes you think. And Tilda was an interesting, that's not who I was expecting the final boss to be. And she's in this big machine, and it's rough. It's a rough battle.
Spectre Prime. I was like, this is awesome. Yeah, you're totally right. I think, like, you know, universal law in sci-fi, the humans are usually the bad guys because of course we are. Like, that's just human nature.
Human nature.
So I thought it was fantastic, and you're right. It kind of more than made up for the fact that, like, this was, like, some of the Far Zenith were a little bit hokey. But I thought that it was great, and obviously we're setting up for a third game where Nemesis is coming to Earth, and now we got to find a way to defeat it. So really, really cool ending. That was the big twist. Don't think it was quite as cool as what Zero Dawn was, because, like you said, like, Zero Dawn seemed plausible, like, it could happen, where Nemesis is just like, this is, like, real sci-fi stuff right now. But, cool. Okay, really quickly. Go ahead. No.
I was just going to add the fact that throughout your journey, you collect friends along the way.
Yes.
They help you in the end. And also Silence. He's, like, an adversary but an ally at the same time.
Well, what I was going to say is, like, really quickly, I was going to say, like, let's go character by character. We can say as little as we want.
Okay. Yeah, let's go.
So let's start. Aloy. Obviously, our lead character. Awesome.
Great.
What else can you say? Aloy's awesome.
Aloy's great.
Silence. I think he's the best character in the game. I love this character.
He's the most he's obsessed with knowledge, and he's like me with the story of Pharaoh and Elizabeth and the Far Zenith, and he's also he has a lot of self-preservation, so he's going to save himself. That's why he acts against Aloy, but in the end he realizes that Aloy has her own strengths that he does not, so he comes to Aloy's side and he stays there, which is another interesting thing I think that happened at the end.
He's very analytical too, like he is no problem sacrificing a few for the greater good of the many. He's very much like Ozymandias actually in that way from Watchmen. Very, very cool character. And Lance Reddick is just so awesome as this guy. He's such a prick. Like, he's so good. Like,
even though he hides it well, like, he doesn't seem to have empathy. He's kind of like a sociopath in that way.
A little.
But he does have a little feeling and admiration for Aloy. And there's moments where he shows it, and I think those are really cool moments.
I agree. Like, you're right. He knows her strengths. Like, he recognized her, but he correctly is also like, well, I can't involve you in my plans because you're going to try and detract them because it involves a lot of human sacrifice.
He did, but she still was victorious, and he didn't anticipate that.
It's almost just like you understand why they don't work together, but you're like, God, just work together.
If they just did, it would be great. Yeah. And now they're at that point where they are, so I'm really hopeful for the future.
Varl. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
This is so sad. I loved Varl. I knew something bad was going to happen.
I did, too. As soon as we were going to Hephaestus, I was like, either the character who's been our ride and die since the beginning is going to die, or the character that just became whole again is going to die. So I was worried about Cthulhu a little bit. Because he, at that point, had just become whole again. Like a whole person again.
I was real worried about Varl, actually, going into this. I was like, I feel like something bad is going to happen. And something did. Varl was so awesome. I love Varl. This was the saddest part of the game by far.
I was sobbing. Like, I was literally crying my eyes out. It was rough. And I knew it was coming, but I still was hopeful that it wouldn't.
So Varl is killed by one of the Far Zenith enforcers. And, like, he dies a heroic death defending Beta, but, like, he is, like, hopelessly outmatched. And, but he does it anyways. And he sticks up, he holds his ground, and you know, you have a little monument that you make for Varl. You know what, to be honest with you, the last thing I did after I beat the game, and you go back to the base and whatever. And
I did it too!
I
know what you're saying. Yeah.
We did it, Varl.
We did.
And I shut the game off after, and I'll probably not boot it back up.
I did the same thing. That's so funny. Because you can do that in the first game with her father figure.
Ross, yeah.
Ross? Is that right?
Something like that. Ross, yes.
So you can go back to his grave and talk to him throughout your adventure, and I was like, I wonder if you could do the same for Varl, and I did at the end.
Yeah. Shout out to Varl. Love you, buddy.
Oh, God, that was so upsetting.
That was so upset. Especially, well, let's talk about Zoe. So Zoe is a character that you meet, and I liked Zoe a lot. And
Zoe's from Plainsong. Yeah.
She's from Plainsong. She's kind of almost like a spiritual, like a new age spiritual leader almost. She's, she's Varl's girlfriend. Very easy on the eyes, if I may say so myself, which I, another reason I liked her. But a great character. And so one of the enforcer that kills Varl, when Zoe stabs him and kills him at the end of the game, I was just like, yeah!
It's so sad, though, because, like, Varl, he was close to everybody, so, like, everybody really felt it. Maybe not everybody, but most of the group, so everybody really felt it. But, like, he left behind Zoe, and Zoe was pregnant.
Yeah, that was tough.
That was really tough.
I thought Zoe was great though. Like
Zoe is an incredible, like very strong.
Yeah.
She's the kind of character that despite like what her elders tell her and she doesn't stand down. She's like, no F you. I know there's something wrong and I'm going to go do something about it. And she does.
Very similar to Aloy actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Erend is back and Erend is awesome. What can you say about Erend? He's just like a beer drinking, hammer wielding, you know, guys like the modern Thor.
Well, I struggle with Erend a little bit, but...
Oh, come on!
He's a very lovable character, but when he gets into his, like, really... And maybe I should, like, feel more bad than annoyed, but he gets into these, like, really dark moments where he's, like, really self-deprecating, really kind of mean to Aloy a little bit, and I'm like,
Mean.
I'm like, there's, yeah, he doesn't understand there's something bigger going on than himself. And so he can be a bit mean. But for the most part, he's actually very supportive. Like, once he understands what's going on, he's very supportive. And I just wish he was a little less self-deprecating. He gets into these moods where he's just like, I don't want to mess up. I want to do something right for once. And I'm like, you have been doing stuff right. Like, you're very helpful.
He's definitely got some issues for sure.
I
think you're right. Once you bring him to the base and you fill him in, and Varl does that too. He's just like, we need Aaron. And so like he goes and gets him. And then once he has the full picture, like he understands. I just love like,
he's on board. Yeah.
He's like, I discovered this thing that the ancients had called death metal. I was like, yes.
There's rock a part on. Where Beta talks about wrestling and she's like, and I was like, oh, I instantly thought of you.
How
and
have I not seen else. That?
Well, that's she's amazing. Like, she's like, she was talking about the video she used to watch on the Zenith ship, and she's like, I think Aaron would have really liked wrestling.
He would have. He would have been.
Yeah, he would have so been into it.
So we talked about Catalo. He was awesome. We talked about Elva as much as I want to. She was annoying. She really was annoying.
Give her a break. She doesn't know any better.
Yeah. Okay.
She was raised in a cult. She's got issues.
I thought Gaia was great. Like the voice actress who is escaping me off the top of my head was great. Beta, that was an interesting character. Really unlikable at the beginning, right? But like, you're supposed to, it was kind of like a very Solid Snake, Liquid Snake dynamic where like one of the twins got like all the dominant genes and the other one got like all the crappy ones. And like Beta, I think, lived her whole life like that. And there was a really nice moment where she's like, what's the difference between us? Why are you so much better? And Ayla's like, because I had Ross and you had a captivity.
I teared up at that point too, because before she said it, I was like, she had Ross. Like, that's who raised her. And I feel like if Beta had been put in Aloy's situation, she would have had a very similar upbringing and similar reactions.
I agree.
But her upbringing was in captivity and very limited everything.
And a character that kind of finds her way by the end of... She kind of finds her courage by the end of the game and uses her strength. So a character that starts off, I think everybody's frustrated with Beta and then grows with the game. So looking forward to seeing her.
I love that Aloy is so frustrated with her. And then when they finally like have their hash it out moment... Aloy's like, this is my sister. Like, you took my sister, you know? And she's, like, really pissed about it. She's like, let's go back and get my sister. And I'm like, oh, my God, I freaking love that.
It was a nice moment. Like, there's lots of, like, really fantastic moments in this game. Mm-hmm. Regala. So in the game, you have a face-off with Regala. This incredible sequence, actually, that we kind of skipped over. But, like, Regala storms the Tanakh capital, basically, and you fight against her, and it's an awesome sequence, like unbelievable. And at the end, you can either spare Regala or you put her out of her misery. And you cold-blooded killer,
I killed the bitch. I killed her. Listen, she caused this rebellion. She didn't want to talk about nothing. She went on this like crazy rebellion, civil war, killed a lot of people, made Catalo lose his arm.
Yeah.
That was really upsetting. And she's like, it was not good. So when it came down to it, I was like, I kind of figured like she might be useful in the end. But at the same time, I was like, I'm on easy mode. I'll be fine.
You know what? So I spared Regala, actually, and you didn't really hear any lines of dialogue from her from the rest of the game, and she did... That's not true. You heard a few things, but, like, she did, in fact, die in the final battle, fighting off, like, six specters all at once, and kind of let you go ahead. So she got the death that she wanted. Good character. I mean,
she gets the death that she wants, too, if you kill her in that moment. True. And Catalo's the one that does it, so I thought that was very fitting.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah, he comes in and he takes the kill, and I'm like, yes.
Okay.
Killer.
The Far Zeniths, they were a bit like out there, but I will say this: I'm glad that you didn't have to, because you fight the Enforcer, and then you immediately do the final battle. And I was thinking, like, as I think everyone was, the final battle is going to be against the leader of the Zeniths, but it doesn't actually turn out that way. So I'm glad that wasn't Tilda is a much more interesting character,
right? She's more interesting because we got more time with her. I kind of wish we could have understood the Zeniths a little bit better, but what really is there to understand about a bunch of narcissists who have lived for for 1,000 years and are basically immortal, and like obviously they're out for their own gain and money and life, and they're gonna kill a bunch of people and to get what they want. So like, what else do you really need to know about them?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Tilda, I thought, you know, came of the story pretty late, but I thought was a really, really interesting character. And you're definitely like one of those things where you never quite felt comfortable with her, and you're like, something is off with you. And it was, and in one sense, like she was true to her word. Like, she didn't like the Xenos. She did want to eliminate them. She did help you do it, but like, she had more up her sleeve as well that she wasn't telling us. So
yeah. And it was basically that she was still like in love with Elizabeth, and she was like, your clone will be enough, and was going to take her. And I thought that it was like, was really weird, but like, it made sense at the same time for, again, she is just like another rich narcissist. So,
and that's how we set up the third Horizon game, which I'm sure is going to be Aloy and friends versus Nemesis coming. What do you think they're going to call it? Like, Horizon Nemesis just seems like too little of a title. It's got to be something else,
right? I don't know. Like, I don't, like, save Earth, something of that nature. Horizon, like, once again, Earth is at risk. I was like, yes, we're going to save Earth. We're going to get Gaia back. It's going to be great. Earth is in danger.
And it's worth mentioning, too, that in order to defeat the Xenos, you have to sacrifice getting Hephaestus, who you finally just got. So now the machines are no longer on your side.
I thought that was very convenient. I was like, oh, look, this is how they make it so the third game we still have to fight machines.
I was like, all right, I knew we had to do it, but like, you know.
But at the same time, you know that Silence is on it. You know that Bait is on it. So maybe we won't have to do it that much in the third game. Who knows?
Maybe. Horizon Forbidden West. Excellent sequel.
We covered a lot of stuff in that story, but there's so much more. Oh. So, like, I feel like you need to play it. I don't think we did it very good justice.
We tried. We would need... So, we've been podcasting for an hour and 40 minutes here. We would need an hour and 40 minutes to just, like, get...
Talk about the story.
Not even talk about the whole story. Almost, like, get the setup to the story. Like,
yeah.
To properly recap Zero Dawn, to give our thoughts of some of that series of events, to, like, really get in depth. Like, we didn't touch any of, like, the periphery characters in this game. Nor should we, I don't think. But, like, there's a lot going on. You should play this game. It's awesome.
It's so good. God, the story is just incredible. Yeah. I kind of wish I could replay those games for the first time all over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those type of games where when I finished Forbidden West, I was like, what do I do with my life? It was, like, one of those kind of stories. Like, what am I do now?
I'll tell you what I did. I bought Final Fantasy VII for Nintendo Switch because I don't have a PlayStation 5 and can't buy the new Final Fantasy VII.
They have it on the Switch? I didn't know that.
No. I bought the original Final Fantasy VII for $8. So, go me.
Gotcha. I haven't played Rebirth yet. I haven't even finished the first one.
I want to play Rebirth so bad, but I kind of don't want to buy a PlayStation 5, you know? I don't know.
Maybe we'll just suck it up and do it.
I don't know. Maybe if people out there, you know, you want to come to Patreon, you know, we got some bonus shows out there. Yeah, I could choose the PlayStation. No, I'm kidding. That money pretty much goes for paying for all of the podcasting that I do, which is a lot, which is 4 now, by the way, because there's a new show,
Spiterian
Reviews. All right. Well, we've went long here, Al. I think that we should just wrap it up and say that Horizon Forbidden West, excellent, excellent sequel. You should definitely check it out. There's a lot of things. I think that if you play Tears of the Kingdom and you play Horizon Forbidden West, I'd be really curious to know what you think that Forbidden West did better or worse, or maybe, I don't, maybe you think it didn't do anything better or worse, but like, let us know, because I do think that there's a lot that the games kind of did take from each other, could have learned from each other in a way. They're almost like Aloy and Silence. Should have worked together, but they didn't, you know? So,
yeah.
Any final thoughts before we get out of here, Al?
Oh my gosh, just go play it. Like, I've been telling everybody that I know that plays video games to just play it, because it's so good.
It is good. It is very good. All right, well, I think we should wrap it up here, because we went for a long one here. And Al's got things to do. I mean, I don't have things to do. I could sit here all day, but...
I got things to do.
Al's got things to do. So, I better get to it here. We would like to remind everybody that, once again, we do have a Patreon channel, patreon.com/SPNet. You can get your monthly ZeldaCast bonus show there, ZeldaCast Top 10s. Plus, I just uploaded all 13 episodes that Goo and I did on the Zelda cartoon for $1. You can get all of them, so go and check it out. That's available to anyone on the Patreon. So, once again, patreon.com/SPNet. New podcast is out. The Spiteria's review. Like, subscribe, rate, recommend, and do the same for the Zelda cast. Tell that Zelda fan in your life where they can get their weekly Zelda fix. Give us a follow over on socials at the Zelda cast, at Spiteria316, at Allison Aletha, and I think that's it. Is that all the plugging that we need to do?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Sometimes I lose myself when I'm doing this outro. But I think that's it.
I can't even mimic your outro, to be honest. So know best.
There's a lot going on. All right. That is going to do it for us, my friends. Until next week, everybody, take care. Have an awesome week. And hey, play Horizon Zero Dawn and Horizon Forbidden West. Good games.
Yep.
Sayonara, bye, everybody. Ciao.
Darkness unknown, my heart with silence burns through solemnness and bone. The edge beyond the shore, this weight of root and rot, I long to reach the other, to find the path we love.